The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It is Thursday. We've made it this far, so pat yourselves on the back. Welcome to it. I'm Nicole Sandler here at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network. And Howie Klein is back today, so that's good. Just in time to say I told you so, because Howie Klein told us no less than 2 months ago that Paul Ryan would not be running for re-election. And while I've learned over the years to believe what Howie Klein tells me, I had my doubts. I'll be honest, I had my doubts. But sure enough, Paul Ryan not running for re-election, leaving the door open for, well, Randy Bryce, who I think would have won anyway. I think it would have been more satisfying to have Randy Bryce beat Paul Ryan outright. But hey, either way, there's the door. Paul, don't let it hit you in the ass on the way out. Now there's the infighting on who's going to take over as, well, either speaker, if Paul Ryan steps down from his speaker post before the end of this session of Congress, or hopefully in the next Congress, minority leader, because if all goes well in November, Democrats will take back the House and the Senate. Wouldn't that be a lovely thing? Today on Capitol Hill, Mike Pompeo is getting grilled in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee as he his hearings begin to become the next Secretary of State. Just the thought of Mike Pompeo being Secretary of State is quite disturbing because of his past, the things he said and done. He's quite the warmonger. He is quite the bigot. And by all appearances, he's a Trump yes man. So I don't know. This is disturbing. I don't know that he'll be any worse than Rex Tillerson, because, Rex Tillerson was pretty bad himself. But I don't know. You know what? Let's start with what's news. We'll just get right into it because there's a lot to talk about, and I've got some sound from today's hearing as well that we can get to too. So,
I read the news today. Oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
So, as I said, Mike Pompeo is in the hot seat at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee today as he testifies in his confirmation hearing to be the next Secretary of State. I pulled over the wrong sound here. So let me play this. Robert Menendez is the ranking Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and he was trying to ask Pompeo about a March 2017 meeting in which Donald Trump dismissed everyone except Mike Pompeo and the director of national intelligence, whose name is escaping me at the moment, ostensibly to talk about James Comey. This is before they fired Comey, to try to get Comey to back off of Trump on the Russia investigation. So here's a little bit of that exchange. It was quite fascinating.
So, Director, this account strongly suggests that the president asked you and Director Coates to interfere with then-FBI Director Comey's investigations into the Trump campaign's contacts with Russia. What did President Trump say to you and Director Coates in that meeting?
Senator, I'm not going to talk about the conversations the president and I had. I think it's in this setting appropriate for a president to have an opportunity to talk with his senior leaders. I'll do that throughout the day. But I will tell you this. The article's suggestion that he asked me to do anything that was improper is false.
Did he ask you to do anything as it relates to that investigation?
Senator, I don't recall. I don't recall what he asked me that day.
He doesn't recall.
Precisely.
Boy, a lot of people have that answer in that seat.
I'm with the president an awful lot. He has never asked me to do anything that I considered remotely improper.
When you say you're not going to talk about
that, either he recalls or he doesn't recall.
You're not asserting executive privilege, are you?
No, Senator. I believe, and I think you will agree, we'll talk about foreign policy issues. We'll talk about
advice. This has a connotation of foreign policy because this is about Russia. And so at the end of the day, understanding how you responded, what you will do as we're looking at mandatory sanctions that the administration has yet to impose, looking at how we're going to deal with a Russia that not only sought to affect our last elections, but is doing so even as we speak, both at here at home and across the world. Those are substantive questions.
Yes, Senator.
And so it's not for me just simply a question of, you know, interest. It's a question of understanding what you were asked, how you responded, and what you did.
So you talked about the important policy issues. I'm happy to talk about this administration's work on Russia. I'm happy to talk about our work on sanctions if that's what you'd
like. Let me ask you this.
If that's what's your question.
Did President Trump ever discuss the FBI or special counsel Russia's investigation with you?
Senator, again, I'm not going to talk about private conversations I've had with the president.
So whenever you come, if you were to be confirmed in the future and we're going to try to talk about foreign policy and we ask you where is the president at or this or that, you're not going to disclose
I'm happy to answer questions about our administration's policies, the work that we're doing. You're asking about conversations. You should know, Senator, as well. I spoke with Special Counsel Mueller, who interviewed me, requested an interview. I cooperated. Your colleagues on the Senate Intelligence Committee have asked for information from me and from the Central Intelligence Agency, as has the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. I think the leaders of those two organizations, in a bipartisan way, that would say I've been cooperative. And in matters
you have spoken to Special Counsel Mueller.
Yes, that's correct.
And what was the subject of the conversation?
Senator, I'm not going to speak to that.
Did the Special Counsel tell you not to speak about these things?
Senator, I have cooperated with multiple investigations. While the investigation continues, I think that's the appropriate way to approach it. And you should know, and no one here today should take away any, because of the fact that I don't want to speak out, there should be no negative inferences with respect to anything, or for that matter, positive inferences about the fact that I think it's most appropriate that while these investigations continue, I not speak to the conversations I've had with the various investigative bodies.
Yeah, I'm sure that if I asked Director Mueller, Special Counsel Mueller,
a simple question, whether you were told you couldn't, I don't think he would say you couldn't. So it's your choice that you're not seeking to do so. And for me, these questions being answered truthfully in a forthcoming way are critically important because it goes to the very essence of how you approach one of the most critical issues that we have. And your unwillingness to speak to it is troubling to me. Let me ask you this. President Trump has repeatedly said that, quote, getting along with Russia is a good thing, unquote. Yesterday, he tweeted a quote, our relationship with Russia is worse now than it's ever been. There's no reason for this. And he indicated he would like to help Russia with its economy. What behavior, if any, has the Kremlin shown that indicates it wants to get along with the United States or our allies?
Senator, this administration has taken a series of actions to push back.
That's not my
Vladimir
question.
Putin.
Let's start with my question.
But, Senator,
my question is what behavior has the Kremlin shown that it indicates it wants to get along with the United States? Is there any? If so, please share it with me.
Senator, I take a backseat to no one with my views of the threat that is presented to America from Russia. And if I am confirmed as the Secretary of State, I can assure you this administration will continue, as it has for the past 15 months, to take real actions to push back, to reset the deterrence relationship with respect to Russia.
A little bit of Mike Pompeo and Robert Menendez back and forth from this morning's hearing, Mike Pompeo's confirmation hearings before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, as he undergoes hearings to become the next Secretary of State. There were a couple of great exchanges with Senator Cory Booker, who pushed him on a couple of really important issues. Again, this guy may just be our next Secretary of State. Listen to this exchange with Cory Booker.
You said in a speech that mourning an America that endorses perversion and calls it an alternative lifestyle, is your words, is being gay a perversion?
Senator, when I was a politician, I had a very clear view on whether it was appropriate for two same-sex persons to marry. I stand by that.
So you do not believe it's appropriate for two gay people to marry?
Senator, I continue to hold that view. It's the same view.
And so people in the State Department, I met some in Africa, that are married under your leadership, you do not believe that that should be allowed?
Senator, I believe it's the case we have married gay couples at the CIA. You should know I treated them with the exact same set of rights.
Believe that gay sex is a perversion? Yes or no?
Senator,
Gay sex is a perversion? Because it's what you said here,
Senator,
in one of your speeches. Yes or no? Do you believe gay sex is a perversion?
Senator, I'm going to give you the same answer I just gave you previously. My respect for every individual, regardless of their sexual orientation, is the same.
Sure,
I will conclude by saying, sir, you're going to be Secretary of State of the United States at a time that we have an increase in hate speech and hate actions against Jewish Americans, Muslim Americans, Indian Americans. Hate acts are on the increase in our nation. You're going to be representing this country and their values abroad in nations where gay individuals are under untold persecution, untold violence.
And it went on for quite some time. Here's the thing. Mike Pompeo, who could very likely be the next Secretary of State, is saying that he doesn't believe gays should be allowed to marry. This administration is setting us back decades. Cory Booker also pressed him on his past comments about Muslims and Muslim Americans. And again, this exchange went on a lot longer than what I'm going to play for you, but just to give you a taste of what a good job. And I'm not the biggest Cory Booker fan, but he went after him pretty impressively.
I want to pick up on one of the themes we talked at length about, and that involves many of your past statements concerning Muslim Americans. And perhaps I just want to start with some of your language. In a speech, you talked about folks who worshipped other gods and called it multiculturalism. You sort of mourn that we live in a country where that happens. Do you have any views that the Muslim faith or people who believe in worshipping, quote unquote, other gods, is that just something negative in our country?
No, Senator. You can look at my record. You don't have to take my word for it here today. My record is exquisite with respect to treating people
he,
of each
he
and every faith.
He has a lot of good praise for himself, doesn't he?
To protect their right to practice their religion or no religion, for that matter, in the way that they want to. I've done that when I ran Thayer Aerospace and Century International.
And Mr. My time is limited, so I can follow up.
But it's important because I've heard these critiques, and you raised it yesterday. I've worked closely with Muslim leaders, with Muslim countries. The CIA has saved countless thousands of Muslim lives during my 15 months.
Sure you have.
This is at the core of who I am, Senator Booker, and I promise you that I will treat persons of each faith or no faith with the dignity and respect that they deserve.
Your words right now are really encouraging. Words do matter. It's not just actions. In a nation of bigotry where you see too much bigotry and hatred, you and I both know words matter. So I do understand your actions that you and I will stipulate to the actions you just said, but I really want to get to the bottom of people who are going to be reading your past statements and give you a chance to further explain them. And I would like to go back to what we talked about, you and I, about this idea, and I'm quoting you, that a special obligation falls on Muslims in regards to terrorist attacks in our country. And you said something very dramatic, and I know you know this. You said that people who are silent are complicit in those terrorist attacks. Do you think that Muslim Americans in this country who serve in our military, who serve in the State Department, their failure to speak up, are they complicit in terrorist attacks?
Senator, each and every human, not just Americans, each and every human being has an obligation to push back against this extremist use of violence from whatever faith.
So you don't create a special class of people in this country based upon their religion that have a special obligation, as you said, to condemn terrorist attacks?
No, Senator. Having said that, I had a chance to talk about this yesterday. I'm not sure we ended up completely agreeing, but perhaps we did. I also do believe this firmly, that for certain places, for certain forms of violence, there are certain who are better positioned, folks who are more credible, more trustworthy, have a more shared experience. And so when it comes to making sure that we don't have terrorists brewing in places that where Muslims congregate,
terrorists
there's a
brewing.
Special place, right? They have an opportunity. It's more than a duty, more than a require. It's an opportunity, right, to be treated as when someone from another faith says it can get characterized.
So if I can go on, because I have some more questions. So you think that Muslims in America who are in positions of leadership have a different category of obligation because of their religion? That's what I'm hearing you saying.
I don't see it. It's not an obligation. It's an opportunity.
Okay, so
it's an opportunity. Yes. Wow. This man has some really disturbing beliefs, and it's frightening. Now, Manu Raju of CNN just tweeted a few minutes ago, Pompeo likely does not have votes to get favorable recommendation from committee. Tim Kaine, one of the two Democrats on panel to vote for Pompeo as CIA director, just told me that he has serious doubts about Pompeo nomination. Gene Shaheen, who voted for him to CIA, also has concerns, as does Rand Paul. So we'll see what happens. Boy, wouldn't that be a kick in the ass to Donald Trump if Mike Pompeo couldn't get out of committee. There's some breaking news that just came down within the last hour or so. I'm just going to read to you from The Hill what it says. Donald Trump on Thursday instructed top administration officials to explore re-entering the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, the trade pact he pulled the U.S. out of last year while calling it a disaster. Speaking after a trade meeting with Trump, Republican senators said the president told White House National Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow and U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer to look into joining the deal, which 11 other Pacific Rim nations signed in March. Senator Ben Sasse told reporters at the White House, quote, the president multiple times reaffirmed in general to all of us and looked right at Larry Kudlow and said, Larry, go get it done. So Donald Trump, who called the TPP a disaster, campaigned on not being in it. It is one of the few things that many, many Democrats agree with, that we shouldn't be in the TPP, is now all of a sudden saying that he wants to be back in it. This man it gives you whiplash, I'll tell you. As he tends to do, the president began the day by tweeting, and again, whiplash on the whole Syria attack thing. One of his early morning tweets today read, never said when an attack on Syria would take place, could be very soon or not so soon at all. In any event, the United States, under my administration, has done a great job of ridding the region of ISIS. Where is our thank you, America? He's delusional. The man is absolutely batshit crazy. All right. Was able to tell you about this yesterday, but it wasn't in our What's News. So Paul Ryan on Wednesday announced that this would be his last term serving in Congress.
I find it hard.
Whoops, that's not the... Wow, I really screwed up all of this stuff. Anyway, he told Jake Tapper that he won't seek elected office again.
I find it hard to believe that January will be the last time you're on the political scene. I find it hard to believe that you won't run for Senate or governor or president someday. Mm. You're shaking your head. You don't think there's no chance you're going to re-enter politics down the road?
Well, not while my kids are growing up, and obviously not in the near future. I really don't see that. I really thought when I took this job, Jake, that this is probably the last elected office I would have. I'm not going to run for president. You know, that's not my plan. I'm not going to do that. I really want to spend time doing the things that I've just discussed doing. I'm always going to advocate for the causes I have. But right now, the last thing I'm thinking about is running for something.
Well, sure. I believe that, but we'll see. I'm gonna believe that we'll see, because your kids are teenagers. They're going to be out of the house soon enough. That's why you're going home, right? Mm-hmm. All right.
No plans to run for anything, and I really don't think I'll change my mind. But thanks, Jake. Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, Marco Rubio told us he wasn't going to run for anything again also, right? He was supposed to be a private citizen after the presidential election. Go figure. Anyway, of course, it's not official until Stephen Colbert weighs in.
Well, we careened toward an apocalypse-a-daisy. There was a bomb dropped on Capitol Hill by Speaker of the House and CrossFit Dracula, Paul Ryan. Ryan will not be running for re-election in 2018. He's out. He said today he wants to spend more time with his wife and kids, which, of course, is what he calls his biceps. A little time with the wife and the kids. Daddy's taking you on vacation. No one with this kind of power just walks away. That's just not done. The man is third in line for the presidency. Though, maybe he's leaving because he just figured that out. Wait, the FBI just raided Michael Cohen's office? Not it! Not it! Soon-to-be former Speaker Ryan doesn't seem too sad to go, and he took the opportunity to remind us of that.
You all know that I did not seek this job. I took it reluctantly. I didn't want this job at first. And most of you know this. I really actually didn't.
No, we believe you.
Sure.
We didn't want you to have that job either. Of course, there's a lot of speculation that Ryan is jumping ship before a big Democratic wave sweeps the midterms. But according to Ryan's friends, there's another reason Ryan is leaving. After Ryan passed tax reform, his longtime dream, he was ready to step out of a job that has become endlessly frustrating, in part because of President Trump. What? Working with President Trump is frustrating? That's not what the last 30 people who quit said. But I get it. And the president wasted no time releasing his own statement, tweeting, Speaker Paul Ryan is a truly good man. And while he will not be seeking re-election, he will leave a legacy of achievement that nobody can question. We are with you, Paul. Yes, Republicans are with you, Paul. And by with you, they mean leaving office in November. So, fare thee well, Paul Ryan. We'll all miss your famous catchphrase. No, I hadn't heard what the president said, but if true, that is troubling.
And that's something that he actually said on numerous occasions. No, I didn't see his tweet, but if true, that's troubling. Yeah. Again, won't miss that man. The Associated Press has more salacious scandal news coming out of the Trump administration. This one, I'll just read it to you. The AP is reporting that the president may have fathered a child with an employee, then paid to keep the situation under wraps. The Associated Press confirmed that the National Enquirer paid $30,000 to a former doorman at Trump World Tower in New York in exchange for the perpetual rights to a story he'd heard about the child. This, of course, as more details emerge about the search warrant executed on Trump's attorney Michael Cohen's office and homes earlier this week. The New York Times' Michael Schmidt tells MSNBC's Ali Velshi what the FBI was looking for included materials related to the infamous Access Hollywood tape.
What they were looking for were efforts by Michael Cohen to suppress negative stories on President Trump in the run-up to the campaign. Obviously, the Access Hollywood video was one of those things. Up until this point, I don't believe we had known anything related to whether Trump's folks knew about the video. But this seems to leads us to believe that there is some reasonable cause to think that Michael Cohen knew about it and was trying to do something to suppress it.
Tell me the connection that the FBI or the Southern District of New York, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, would make between what Michael Cohen was trying to do if he was trying to suppress information and what federal laws might be broken.
Well, there would be lots of legal questions if Michael Cohen was out there with cash trying to pay people to be quiet before the election. That is problematic. And that would get into campaign finance laws and raise all sorts of questions of how money outside the campaign finance system was being used to benefit Donald Trump. Now, the other thing that I wanted to point out about our story is that they were also looking for other non-disclosure agreements, these secret arrangements that Michael Cohen is said to have made with these women who allege a relationship with Donald Trump, with other women. So this was a very broad demand that was in a search warrant. We have to remember, to get a search warrant, you need a judge to approve it. That's a pretty high bar. And for the Justice Department to go to such a level on the president's lawyer certainly shows that they had some real reason to believe there was some there.
It just gets creepier and creepier. Don't you feel like you need a shower? Yeah, I do. Well, I'm not going to take a shower, but we'll take a timeout. We'll get to Brad and Desi and the Green News Report and come back on the other side with Howie Klein, who can say, "I told you so." That's all coming up on the Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network.
It's Thursday, April 12, 2018.
Even in 1958, one of those air pollutants that this Shell researcher reports on was the pollution of the atmosphere by carbon from fossil sources.
Newly unearthed internal documents reveal that Shell Oil knew as early as 1958 that its products caused global warming. Senate Democrats call for EPA Chief Scott Pruitt to resign as internal EPA report undermines Pruitt's claims of unprecedented death threats. Plus,
even if none of those backwards movements actually last, we're still losing chunks of time when we should be participating with the rest of the world in attacking this issue.
Obama EPA Administrator warns of the long-term consequences of Pruitt's reign.
All of those consequences and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This is a pretty sudden fall from grace for Pruitt, who's been a conservative favorite for his aggressively pro-industry stance. So aggressive, in fact, that even though he is literally in charge of the EPA, his LinkedIn page still lists him as a leading advocate against the EPA's activist agenda.
And it's still true. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we know that Exxon knew, we know that Mobil Oil knew, and now we know that Shell knew too.
Yep, a stunning trove of internal company documents reveal that Shell Oil did know too. Shell's own scientists, beginning back in the late 1950s, warned company executives of Shell's significant role in causing global warming, and they urged immediate action to avoid catastrophic climate change impacts. Shell's researchers even accurately predicted that the oil industry would eventually face lawsuits and investigations for failing to act on that knowledge. But like ExxonMobil and the rest of the oil industry, Shell instead worked to publicly undermine climate science for decades. In an interview on the broadcast, Carol Muffett, president of the Center for International Environmental Law, said that these new documents provide evidence for the multiple investigations and lawsuits against the oil industry over climate damages.
What we can now show, and this is very legally relevant, is that for decades, Shell was aware of those risks, and it continued to take those risks on the assumption that ultimately it would be consumers and governments that bore the cost rather than Shell itself.
We'll link to Muffett's report on this at greennews.bradblog.com, but some of the material is absolutely jaw-dropping, going back to 1962 with the Shell scientists saying very specifically that CO2 from the burning of fossil fuels causes global warming, the very thing that Shell and Exxon and Mobil and all the rest have been trying to confuse the public about for decades.
This week in politics, an internal EPA memo undermines claims that embattled Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt faces unprecedented security threats. According to Democratic Senators Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island and Tom Carper of Delaware, the unreleased assessment says that EPA's intelligence staff found no specific credible threats to the administrator, who has been under intense scrutiny over his outside emphasized spending on personal security and first-class travel. This week, the EPA fired the career agency official who approved that report, Mario Caraballo. In response, an anonymous career EPA staffer told Politico that Caraballo's firing will not intimidate staff, but will instead, quote, embolden us to leak more to get these criminals out.
Go get them.
Senate Democrats on Wednesday formally called for Pruitt to resign or be fired over his multiple ethical scandals and questionable spending. They also announced an attempt to block a confirmation vote of Trump's nominee for the number two spot at EPA. If confirmed, Andrew Wheeler, a coal industry lobbyist and a climate science denier, would take over the EPA should Pruitt exit. But as with Pruitt's confirmation vote last year, Democrats may not be able to muster the votes to block Wheeler. This week, two coal state Democratic senators, Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota and Joe Manchin of West Virginia, announced they would support Wheeler's confirmation.
Incredible.
Finally, in an interview with WGBH in Boston, former Obama EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy says that while Pruitt has succeeded in attacking science on behalf of polluting industries and appearing to be effective, the good news is that so far Pruitt has only launched the process of rolling back major environmental and public health standards, and that can take years and could very well be overturned in court. However, she says the bad news is that much damage can be done in the meantime.
And when he talks about his success, all he talks about is how much he has saved business, as if allowing more pollution wouldn't cause lives to be damaged and health to be damaged. He's doing a terrible job.
But he's doing the job he was hired to do. For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Well, he was gone for a couple of weeks, but he's back now. Hi, Howie Klein.
Hello, Nicole. I was in Thailand.
You were in Thailand this time. Ah, so how was that?
I love Thailand. It's always a nice place to visit. But basically, I went there for another reason, which was to get medicine.
Oh.
So when I was finished with my cancer treatment, there are always complications and side effects, and one of them has me using an experimental drug, which isn't covered by insurance in the United States. Even Medicare, which is my insurance, won't cover it, and it's very, very expensive. It's about $4,000 a month.
Oh, wow.
You can get the exact same drug in Thailand for $600 a month. Actually, the price went down to $550 a month. So I went over there to buy, about 6 months worth, which you, and they can't mail it. The U.S. prohibits it from being sent here. So none of the Canadian companies that send drugs to the U.S. will do it. So it's not easy to get. But there's a great drugstore in Bangkok that sells it, and they're very cooperative.
and I went there to get that and other drugs. I mean, that was the main one. But, you know, I even one of those inhalers, which costs between $70 and $80 in America, is only $6 in Bangkok. So I wouldn't fly all the way there just for that. But since I was there, I bought that as well. And the other drugs I use, everything's cheaper in Bangkok.
Do they hassle you when you try to bring it back in, or do you have to sneak it back in, or how does that work?
You have to sneak it back in.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable what you've got to, the hoops you have to jump through for healthcare in this country.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, this is by far the richest country in the world, and yet we have to go to a third world country to be able to buy affordable healthcare.
It's absolutely insane. But you love Thailand anyway, so you got to vacation.
Yeah.
I always picture you as like Anthony Bourdain going out and eating and, you know.
Oh, yes. There's great food in Thailand. That's definitely one of the reasons I like to go there. I know all the great restaurants. I know some of the people who work in those restaurants I've known for years and years and years. So I always look forward to that. And, I know some of the chefs and the owners. So that's something that I look forward to in a big way.
Well, welcome home. We did miss you. But boy, you're back just in time to say I told you so, because you've been telling us for a couple of months now that Paul Ryan was not going to run for re-election. And as usual, you were right.
Well, yes, I was right about that. And it was clear to me. And I was laughing when the mainstream Beltway media was completely denying that. I thought, you know, what idiots they are, and they're still idiots. I mean, denying what happened. It was so funny. I mean, last night on one of the TV shows that I really like to watch a lot, and Chris Hayes' show on MSNBC. I really respect Chris.
I do too.
I think he's the smartest guy on TV, and he didn't seem to. He seemed a little distracted last night, and he had a panel of imbeciles on explaining what happened. And they didn't know what happened. They didn't know why it happened. And they're, you know, blabbling on about all sorts of stuff, not understanding in any way, shape, or form that the reason Ryan decided to retire at the age of 48 is because there was no pathway to victory for him in the November election. He can't win that election, and Ryan knows it. But these Beltway people have their own narrative about what happened, which is way more complicated and doesn't involve the election and doesn't involve Randy Bryce. But the reality is, and I've seen the exact same polling and focus groups that Ryan is looking at, and there is no way for Ryan to win, and he knows it. That district, Wisconsin's first district, is about a little over a third Republican, a little under a third Democrat, and about a third independent. So unless you can win those independents, even if you get all the Republican votes, you can't win as a Republican. And same thing, you can't win as a Democrat, even if you get all the Democratic votes, you have to get independents. And as I've said on this show before, the independents were not going to vote for Ryan. So I looked at a focus group. Now, this focus group did not include any Republicans, did not include any Democrats. The focus group was strictly independents, and not just were they independents, they were independents who voted for Trump. So independents who voted for Trump, that is a group that Paul Ryan needed to win. And this group, not only was the group not going to vote for Trump, I'm sorry, not vote for Ryan. So the independents who voted for Trump had decided not to vote for Ryan, but worse for Ryan. And the reason that he decided not to run for re-election is they were not going to listen to anything Ryan had to say. So they had already decided that they were immune to his messaging. They would not hear what he had to say. They would not, even with the millions of dollars worth of advertising that he could send their way, they weren't going to hear it. They weren't going to watch it. They were not interested in what he had to say. They had already made up their mind and were closed off to Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan knew that, and Paul Ryan did not for the future. You know, Paul Ryan wants to run for president eventually, and for that reason, and that is the main reason, even if there were other reasons that the Beltway has for why he wasn't going to run, the main reason is he did not want to be defeated by a union construction worker, which basically is what Randy Bice is. Sure. Randy Bice is an iron worker, but basically he's a construction worker who didn't go to college, and Ryan didn't want what he thought of as the disgrace of being beaten by a union construction worker, and therefore decided he would pull out. What I didn't know for sure was which of the two excuses he would use. Was he going to, you know, claim he needed to spend more time with his family, specifically with his sons who would soon be leaving, and he wanted to teach them how to use bows and arrows. Uh-huh. I'm not joking about that. Uh-huh. Or was he going to use the excuse of joining the executive branch and taking a cabinet position, which was another possibility, because there are a bunch of cabinet positions opening up, and Ryan would be an easy confirmation. Disgracefully, he would be confirmed easily. So I wasn't sure about that, but I knew that would be one of those things. In the end, he, at least as of now, he decided not to get further mixed up with the disaster known as the Donald Trump administration. And, you know, the excuse that he uses, he needed to spend more time with his family. Well, okay, fine.
Right.
That's where we're at with that silliness.
So now, I don't know when the deadline for filing is in Wisconsin to get into this race.
June 1st.
Oh, June 1st. So now the floodgates will open for Republicans to jump into the race, because they have one isn't there a neo-Nazi running in there now?
Yeah, a very wealthy neo-Nazi named Paul Nyland, who is going to be running against Paul Ryan. So Paul Ryan obviously hates this guy, but he's not the kind of person that is likely to be able to win a Republican primary. He ran last time, and I don't remember exactly what the vote was, but around 15% is all he was able to get. So he's not someone who is likely to be able to win this. I assumed that Paul Ryan already had a candidate picked out. And that's why he was waiting. He doesn't want the whole world jumping into this race, because Wisconsin is the kind of state where whoever gets the most votes, no matter how few they are, as long as they beat all the other contenders, they are the nominee. So even if Nyland could pull in, say, 20% or so, and everybody else splits the vote and gets lower amounts, Nyland would be the nominee. So, you know, Paul Ryan wanted to make sure that his pick would have a head start. I'm assuming that there's somebody ready to jump out of the gate. And I think it's going to be this guy who at one time worked for Paul Ryan, and he's now an investment banker in Madison. So he doesn't live in the district unless he's already moved back in. And that'll be the nominee. But there are other people that are interested in it too. I'm just guessing that they've kind of got this under control. The Republican Party in Wisconsin is a fairly controlled operation. But we'll see in the next few days what really happens with that.
Right. Meanwhile, Randy Bice is outraising everybody, and he's poised.
Being Paul Ryan.
Outraising Paul Ryan. And that's
in the
a
last
big
quarter,
deal.
He did outraise him. I mean, Paul Ryan knew he wasn't going to run. He didn't make up his mind yesterday. And he just wasn't, you know, Randy Bice raised over $2 million in the last quarter, and Paul Ryan only raised $200,000. So
wow.
Randy Bice beat him 10 times by 10 times.
Well,
Paul Ryan, you know, was aware he wasn't going to run, and Randy Bice is, you know, aware that he knew he had to raise a lot of money against Paul Ryan, because Paul Ryan does have a big war chest.
Yes, but he's raising more money for the party, it seems, than for in his own district. He's been virtually absent in his own district. He hasn't had a town hall meeting there, or even a public appearance in Janesville. It's Janesville, right, where he's from?
Janesville is his own hometown. That's right. One of the three big cities in the district. It's Janesville, Kenosha, and Racine.
Ah, Okay. So he hasn't been there. And in fact, you know, the kids from Parkland organized a day of town hall meetings across the country. And of course, none of the Republicans showed up. And what they did was they invited where there were challengers. And Randy Brice showed up along with Mark Pocan, showed up, the one in Janesville, that got some good national press.
Yeah. So Paul Ryan, when he does do some kind of a town hallish kind of thing, it's by invitation only. So it's anything but a real town hall where anybody can come and ask any question. It's an extremely controlled situation, and I'm afraid that doesn't count.
Right. No. In fact, he had one. He had that day that they had the town hall in Janesville. He was doing one in Texas. Go figure.
Yeah. Right.
Shows where his loyalties are. So I'm guessing Randy Brice is feeling pretty good right about now.
Yeah, he is. We had talked about this situation of Paul Ryan not running for as long as I've been talking with you about it on the radio. Uh-huh. I've been talking with Randy about it as well. So it wasn't like it was some giant surprise. But of course, it was, at one moment it's Howie Klein speculation, and at the next moment it's, wow, it happened. It's real.
Right.
So, yeah, so he knew there was a chance of that happening.
Well, good. It was an exciting day when I saw the news cross. It's like there's Howie was right again. So Howie Klein is with us. There are some special elections going on. There was one down here in Florida on Tuesday, again, won by a Democrat by a huge margin.
Yeah. So that one is a little bit different from the normal special elections that you and I have been talking about. This was a Democratic seat. So mostly the ones that happen are Republican seats, and they're switching, they're either switching to Democrat or they're swinging very, very, in a very big way to a Democrat. This is the reason this was different, and this is a Palm Beach County district. Mm-hmm. It does not include Mar-a-Lago, but it's pretty close to Mar-a-Lago. So this district is a Democratic district. The person who resigned as a Democrat, and no one thought that, except Republicans, no one thought Republicans had any chance at all to win this. But the reason that this is a significant win was because of the swing. So the Republicans got some kind of crazy idea that they could perhaps, keep the swing down, and they spent a lot of money in the district. And it was a big waste of time because Trump had won the district by, Trump did not win. Hillary won the district with about 63%, so very significant. The Republican who ran did much, much worse than Trump did. And the Democrat, this is a state Senate district, state Senate 31, the Republican who lost did much worse than Trump did. The Democrat who won did much better than Hillary did. The margin of victory was 75-25.
Wow.
So that's another huge swing in favor of Democrats. And the woman who lost this seat is the vice chair of the Republican Party of Palm Beach County. So
oh,
it's
boy.
Not just some random person. She knows what's going on. And she, in the night of this last Tuesday, the night of her defeat, she talked to the media, and she was, I don't want to say she was bitter, but she was very realistic. And she said what happened was, is that Democrats were very enthusiastic about voting, and they came out in their numbers, and Republicans, for some reason that she didn't understand, did not come out to vote. That is the story of these elections. The Democratic enthusiasm is sky high. When they're pulling that lever, they're pulling it a lever against Trump. That's what's happening. Trump's not on the ballot. Trump didn't talk about this race. He didn't even know about it.
Right.
Democrats are coming out to vote in big numbers because they are motivated against Trump. Republicans just don't. They don't care. They're not voting. They're disillusioned and unhappy. So, yeah, she got 25% of the vote. But Trump had done better And the reason she did so badly was not a verdict on her. They didn't know who she was. It wasn't a verdict on the Democrat being so much better than her. They didn't know who she was either. But they came out to vote. The Democrats came out to vote because of an anti-Trump feeling, and the Republicans did not come out to vote. They just sat home. It wasn't like Republicans came out to vote and voted for the Democrat. That isn't what happened. They just didn't come out to vote. And the independents who voted for the Democrat. They didn't vote for the Republican. And that, like I said, is the story of 2018. Republicans are staying home, independents are switching to Democrat, and the Democrats are coming out in great numbers. That's why we're seeing these swings everywhere in the country.
Are there more of these special elections coming up, or are we...
There are special elections all over the country all the time. One of the reasons why is this Me Too movement. That's why there was that one in Florida, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh.
The Democrat who was in there, except that he was accused of, harassment of a woman, and he retired. And that keeps happening. I mean, it keeps happening everywhere. In fact, the head of the Ohio, I think he's either the speaker or the majority leader of the Ohio legislature, just yesterday announced that he's leaving. He's retiring early because he was accused. And, I guess he's retiring because he was guilty. And there'll be a special election in Ohio for his seat. And that's been going on and on everywhere in the country. And it's both Democrats and Republicans.
Right. Now, there's a couple coming up in Wisconsin, aren't there? I don't know if it's for the same reason, but Scott Walker tried to stop these special elections from happening. And I think he got overturned, if I read that correctly.
Yes, you did. This was not about sexual harassment. These two were, Scott Walker being hoist on his own petard, because they were both of these cases were people who he had taken out of the legislature to give jobs in his administration, opening up the seats. And then when he realized about what was going on with these giant swings in Republican districts, he tried to stop it, and he was overruled in court cases. And even though he was overruled in court cases, he still tried to stop it. And when he realized that he was going to be, in some jeopardy, legal jeopardy, he said, okay, do them. So very, unhappy about it, but there will be special elections in these two seats.
So
two Republican seats, at least one of which is likely to go Democrat. Both of them are going to be more demonstrations of swings, of big swings away from Republicans and towards Democrats. That's really what's most important. Whether the Democrat wins or not, we like them to win, but some of these districts are impossible and they're not going to win, but the swings that we see are what's important, because that is what we need nationally. We need in November, we need these big swings. And then in some of the districts where Trump won by 10 points, say, and these swings are bigger than 10 points, that's going to decimate the Republican Party. By the way, very few people know this because it got lost in the news cycle, but within about an hour of Ryan saying he isn't running, a Republican congressman in Florida,
right,
said he's over it too. Dennis Ross, who, is a backbencher from a part of, it's mostly a rural district in the center of Florida, although it gets into the suburbs of Tampa. And my guess from what I'm seeing is that most of the voters live in the, even though it's a big district, most of the voters live in the Tampa suburbs, the suburbs east of Tampa.
And so
Dennis Ross said, I've had it. I've been in there for 8 years. I'm not doing it anymore. And he was the first of what I expect to be many Republicans who are looking at Ryan's resignation and thinking, I'm not staying here. I'm leaving too.
Right. Hopefully that. The floodgates have already opened. There are more more Republicans who've pulled out, who've said they're not running for re-election than what since the 50s or forever.
Yeah, there'll be a lot more now. I mean, there are about 40 so far, and I'm guessing there's going to be at least another dozen caused by this Ryan resignation. You know, now there's going to be this tremendous fight of who is going to be the Republican leader. Chances are it's not going to be the Speaker. I don't think that there's any chance or that anyone thinks that the Republicans are going to have the chance to have a Speaker in 2019, that there's going to be a Democratic Speaker. But so they're really fighting over the minority leadership. So it'll be who's going to be the minority leader in 2019. So everyone thinks that the fight is just between
Kevin McCarthy and
McCarthy
Steve Scalise.
Right. So Kevin McCarthy is a typical Wall Street Republican. Trump loves him. Now, Trump also likes Steve Scalise. He's currently the whip. He's also a former KKK guy. So he's from that wing of the party, the KKK wing from Louisiana, whereas McCarthy is in a very red district, the reddest district in California, and he's just a money guy, and the thought is that Trump will at some point endorse him and he'll be the guy. That's what the thinking is. However, the Freedom Caucus has their own ideas. Believe it or not, one of the guys in the Freedom Caucus talks all the time to a very, very close friend of mine. And he's been telling my friend that they've got their own ideas putting in Mark Meadows. Mark Meadows is extremely right-wing. He, in fact, is the head of the Freedom Caucus right now. And they want to see Scalise and McCarthy bloody each other so badly that they can slip their own guy in. And once the kind of mainstream conservatives in the GOP caucus get wind of that, there's going to be more of them bailing out. They don't want to be part of a party run by the Freedom Caucus. If they did, they would have joined the Freedom Caucus.
Right. Although I just read today that Steve Scalise said that he wouldn't run against Kevin McCarthy, that if Kevin McCarthy wants to be Speaker or minority leader, that he would take a back seat to him, I guess, to avoid that bloody battle.
Yeah, that he's saying that. He also said it 2 weeks ago, and as he's saying it, he's writing down commitments from Republicans to vote for him.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you can believe them on this as much as you believe them on anything else.
Yeah, exactly right.
Unreal.
Although the thing that would make Scalise not do it is a phone call from Trump saying, don't do it.
Yeah.
We'll take care of you in another way or whatever. But, he has been, getting commitments from people. So, like I said, the one way he can be persuaded to not run and just let McCarthy have it would be Trump. But I don't think the Freedom Caucus people are going to be swayed by Trump. If they decide that McCarthy's the wrong guy and they want to put their own guys up as the leader, they'll do that. And from what I'm hearing, that's exactly what they plan to do.
That would be unbelievable. Look, we're looking at, what's his name, Mike Pompeo, having hearings today to be the next Secretary of State. So nothing is beyond comprehension anymore. We're totally in opposite world.
Yep. Yeah, I watched some of that this morning, too. I fell asleep during it.
Yeah, I actually did, too. Oh, boy. Howie Klein, when's the next primary race? Do you know offhand?
There's four of them on May 8th, including some very, very important ones. There's a really, really key one in Indiana and a really, really key one in, we're talking congressional now.
Yes.
Another very key race in North Carolina. So those are the ones I'm watching closely. And then there's, of course, the governorship of Ohio on that day as well.
Oh, really?
Dennis Kucinich has a possibility of of becoming the Democratic nominee.
And Rob Cordray as well.
I don't think he's going to, but there's a chance.
What about Rob Cordray? He was the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Yeah, those are the two who are running. Cordray got hurt because it was discovered that he's been an NRA ally for years and years and years.
Oh.
So that suddenly hurt him, and that's something that they're talking about a lot in Ohio now.
I see. I wasn't aware of that. Howie Klein, we're just about out of time. It's great to have you back. I'm sorry you had to go all the way to Thailand to get the medicine you need. That really is ridiculous, but I'm glad you were able to get it. And once again, Howie Klein was right. Great call on Paul Ryan, and good news for all of us. Thank you as always, and I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Nicole.
Take care. Bye-bye. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com. And, of course, the Blue America PAC, where he finds the best progressive candidates that you should go out and support and vote for. We'll do it again tomorrow. Thanks again for listening, everyone.